Track 13, Dorothy Dewson, Suffragette and Social Reformer. Chris Armstrong looks at the life and campaigns of Dorothy Dewson, one of the first women elected as an MP for the Labour Party.
Dorothy Dewson came from a family which was very comfortable financially, but one imbued with a strong sense of social justice. Her father was Alderman George Dewson, a prosperous businessman, the grandson of the founder of what was to become a major firm of builders' merchants. The company had started in the Cambridgeshire village of Erith and also acted as coal merchants. George Dewson was responsible for the Norwich end of the business. George's wife, Mary, came from a prominent Norwich commercial family, the Jarolds. Her father, Samuel, was one of the sons of John Jarold II, who opened the Norwich store. As with several of his brothers, Samuel did not enjoy a positive relationship with his father, who admitted them to partnership in the business only after a tussle and on legal advice. But they shared a common cause, promoting the temperance movement. In fact, Samuel died after reputedly catching a chill in the early morning while distributing temperance literature. Social conscience was a distinct family trait. John Jarold II had been a prominent anti-slaver and a great advocate of education for the less privileged. Perhaps Dorothy, as she preferred to be known, inherited both her stubbornness and her real concern for the disadvantaged from her great-grandfather. She was brought up in the most comfortable surroundings, initially in a large house in Thorpe Hamlet, but later in a rather grand townhouse on Brackendale. She attended Norwich High School for Girls, at that time based in the Assembly House, and then, briefly, Cheltenham Ladies' College, before going up to Girton College. At the time, Cambridge did not offer degrees to female students, so her BA degree in classics was, nominally, from Trinity College Dublin. With such a conventional upper-middle-class early educational background, she excelled not just intellectually but also at tennis and hockey. Admission to Girton in 1903 must have been quite an eye-opener, and it was while here that she first showed signs of the radicalism which was to characterise her future life. While there, she joined the Fabian Society, a group of intellectuals created to seek to influence the policies of the Liberal Party, from which she soon moved on to embrace a more radical ambition. The twin causes with which she became involved over the next few years were the suffragette movement, specifically the more militant part, the Pankhursts' WSPU, and Keir Hardie's Independent Labour Party. The two were probably linked in her mind. Votes for women would greatly increase the probability of more left-wing members of Parliament. After graduating, she taught, first at an independent school in Kent, but then returned to Norwich in 1911. She was a founder member of the Norwich WSPU and not the only supporter within her family. Her brother Harry was a generous financial supporter of the movement. The WSPU became increasingly militant, and in 1913 they set fire to a large house off the Newmarket Road and brought about the postponement of the opening of Bunting's store by disfiguring the windows with suffragist slogans. They certainly attracted attention, even in rural areas. Following those events, my grandfather, then Vicar of North Tuddenham, commented in his annual letter to his parishioners that politically minded women continue their outrages unchecked, despite having rather sententiously opened his letter expressing the view that politics ought to be kept out of a parson's annual letter. He finished with the remark, "Trouble is definitely ahead." He was right, but possibly not for the reasons he anticipated. The following year, unexpectedly, from out of a moderately blue sky, the country was at war with Germany. The war created an issue for Dorothy. Committed though she was to the cause of votes for women, she found herself at odds with the Pankhursts. They suspended WSPU activities and supported the war effort. Dorothy, as a determined pacifist, could not agree and turned her attention to another of her causes, the plight of the poor in Norwich. A year earlier, she'd been one of a team of investigators surveying the circumstances of the destitute of Norwich. Frank Mears, in his excellent book, Dorothy Dewson, Socialist and Suffragette, detects the hands of Harry and Dorothy Dewson in the writing of the conclusions to the report that was finally published anonymously following the investigation. It was a detailed and highly critical review of the relief available and the manner of its distribution, the results of which were living conditions which gave little prospect of escape from a life of extreme poverty in slum areas. The report made specific recommendations for the level and management of relief to counteract this. At the time, relief was managed by a board of guardians, a group elected triennially, and their attitude was, to the eyes of the investigators and some others, mean in the extreme. The investigators determined to stand in the 1913 election to the board, and Dorothy and her brother did so. Given that those entitled to vote were also those who would bear the cost of an increased poor rate if the proposals of the report were implemented, it's perhaps surprising that several of the investigators were elected, though Dorothy and her brother failed narrowly. It was, however, widely accepted that Dorothy's efforts influenced the long-term development of a more just system of relief. The war, which quickly followed, brought difficulties for Dorothy, who was, as we've seen, a pacifist, not a popular line to take, even in trade union circles. She spent the early part of the war running a workshop set up by the Women's Emergency Corps to alleviate unemployment among women. The workshop manufactured toys. However, it soon became obvious that there was little danger of unemployment as war work became available and the number employed in the workshop reduced to the point that Dorothy decided to quit and move to London, becoming employed by the National Federation of Women Workers. Here she represented women workers in pursuing claims for better pay, with such success that by the end of the war she was the Federation's secretary. The war over, women found jobs harder to get as demobilised soldiers returned to the roles in which women had been welcomed during the hostilities. Soon the number of unemployed females climbed to over 500,000, and Dorothy was fully occupied in union affairs, including organising a meeting at the Albert Hall to launch a women workers' charter, demanding not just work for a sufficient wage, but also a right to leisure. In 1918, the right to vote was given to women over the age of 30. Men could vote at 21, but this inequality was removed in 1928 by, ironically, a Conservative government. In the meantime, the Federation had been subsumed within the National Union of General Workers, where she was chief organiser of the women's section. A full understanding of the living conditions of working women did not come naturally to an upper-middle-class Cambridge graduate, and she worked for a while as a housemaid in a plush London hotel, where she found the luxury available to the guests in stark contrast to the living conditions of the staff. She shared a mice-infested room with four other housemaids and worked a 13-hour day for 15 shillings per week. It's about 75p. She may have been the first political figure to take this kind of step, but she wasn't the last. Matthew Paris, then a Conservative MP, in the 1980s tried living in a bedsit on unemployment benefit. Each of them had the sense to limit their experience to a very short period. Dorothy's next campaign was to seek election to Parliament, and in 1923 she became MP for one of the Norwich seats, being one of the three female Labour candidates elected nationally. One of her fellow candidates was Margaret Bondfield, later become the first female minister. The pair of them caused some comment because they arrived at the House hatless. Labour was, for the first time, in power. Just. It was a minority government. Demonstrating solidarity with the working class, she once set out to walk from Westminster to Norwich rather than travel on a train manned by blacklegs during a strike. In the end, she didn't have to, as having walked, bussed, and hitchhiked as far as Bury St Edmunds, where she put up in the luxurious surroundings of the Angel Hotel, she discovered that the strike was over and completed her journey by train. In Parliament, she made her maiden speech in support of the removal of the iniquity in voting rights between the sexes, but her parliamentary career was short-lived and she lost her seat in the 1924 election, failing to regain it in either of the next two. Instead, she became involved with another cause, becoming president of the Women's Birth Control Group. At the same time, she was elected to Norwich City Council, acting as a councillor for 7 years and promoting the development of additional parks in the city. In 1936, she married a tea merchant, who died in 1939. In 1946, she married again, this time to an MP, but he too died within a couple of years. During those years, her public political involvement diminished. But Dorothy Jewson was an articulate, forceful and formidable feminist and pacifist, an unyielding socialist who, in her own words, sought to abolish inherited wealth. Her strong views were even more strongly expressed, and this may have been responsible for her limited electoral success nationally. She was a woman who suffered much sadness. Both her husbands died shortly after she married them, and her beloved and supported brother Harry died of his wounds in the First World War. She found solace in her faith. She was a Quaker. She died in Norwich in 1963, leaving £3,000 to the city for the benefit of the poor and elderly. One can only admire her selflessness and her energy in pursuit of causes she'd held dear throughout her adult life.